Hey there! Most people think that cyber is just for geeks, but the world we live in is an increasingly automated one. From the cars we drive, to the phones in our pockets, to the way we pay in stores, everyone is really a part of cyber, whether we realize it or not.
My name is Caroline. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at COBOL, or Pentest as a service company. I've been working in cybersecurity for 17 years now. When I was 16 years old, my Chinese immigrant father said to me, "What do you want to study in college?" And I said, "I want to study dancer psychology." And he said, "You're going to study engineering and you're going to attend the best school you can get accepted to." So I went to UC Berkeley. I studied electrical engineering. Between my junior and senior year, I got an internship. It was at eBay. It was in IT project management. When I graduated, I said, "Hey, I'd really like to work on this team full time." And they said, "There's a hiring freeze in IT right now, but there's an entry level position on the information security team." And the rest is history. I've worked to protect and defend eBay and Zynga. I've done some global product management. I've done management consulting. COBOL is my first startup. And I feel like I'm just getting started.
Wow, that's fascinating. I love that transition from dancer psychology to information security.
Yeah, and it's funny because our mission at COBOL is actually let security dance. Because I think that there's a lot of analogies that say security is a vitamin, security is a painkiller, security is a band-aid, security is a feature. And I think all of that is actually wrong, because security is an outcome, it's a result, and it has to do with multiple people dancing with each other. It has to do with the interactions and the behaviors and the decisions and the actions that different people take and the outcome as a result. So our company is really about security and engineering teams collaborating in order to improve security, which I think is actually going to help the industry.
I love it. That is the only way that we can improve the industry, because the security teams historically have not been doing a great job of securing their systems on their own.
It's hard, and it's too bad. I mean, in 2021, the whole big thing was ransomware. Ransomware is going to continue to blow up in 2022. The first ransomware attack was in 1989. I was 6 years old. I think maybe you weren't even born yet. I mean, literally that long ago. And what that means is we actually know what to do, but we're not doing it. And so why is that? Why are we not doing these really important, maybe not the sexiest things? Why is it that when you hear somebody talk about their annual goals, they're not I'm going to make some backups and I'm going to test them to make sure they work? That's not super exciting, but it's super important. Stuff like, I'm going to make sure that my asset inventory is really up to date, and that we have our software updated, and that we have our patches installed. Again, not the most exciting thing, but super duper important.
Yeah, well, it's pretty crazy where we are right now. And like you said, we haven't changed much for the past 25 years, 30 years.
We've tried so hard. We've tried so hard. We got, as an industry, we got a new OWASP top 10 last year, OWASP top 10 2021. The first OWASP top 10 was released in 2003. I have a funny joke about sort of how long ago 2003 was. So in 2003, Matthew McConaughey started a movie called How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, a movie that I happen to adore. In 2021, Matthew McConaughey started a movie called Sing 2 as an animated koala. That much time has passed. And if I put OWASP top 10 2021 right next to OWASP top 10 2003, it's the things haven't changed. We as an industry, we actually know how to find these problems. We know how to fix these problems. We know how to prevent these problems. So what is the problem? We need to work collaboratively together with engineering. And that's something that I think we can unlock. And it's going to be game changing for the industry if we can figure out how to do it.
Yeah, no, that's so that's such a true point. I know in our company, we've been working really hard to try to shift their security left, where the security engineers aren't making all the decisions. We're giving the engineers the ability and the empowering them to make the security decisions by themselves.
Yeah.
because I think we've always like looked at security as this like watchtower that like only a few select few nerdy people can come up to the watchtower and control the entire company and the engineering. But things are changing, and like it hasn't worked for 40 years 30 years, so like you think it's going to start working now?
I think we have an opportunity, and I think it's because, first of all, people, like regular people, understand and believe that cybersecurity is an actual problem. 20 years ago, it was hard to actually convince people that this was real. Now everyone knows that it's real. So that's thing one. The second thing is, I think there are people getting into the industry who are actually good at communication, who are actually good at teaching people, who are actually good at persuading people and being curious about people and listening. Because as security people, if we're going to secure systems, we have to learn about those systems. We have to understand those systems. We have to have an appreciation for the people who are building and maintaining and operating those systems. And I think there's a change. I think we have an opportunity.
You're so right. So I guess one following question is like, why do we need you? Like, why do we need, and when I say you, I mean our audience. Why do we need new people in security? Non-technical people in security, non-geeky people in security, people of diversity, young people in security.
It comes down to the fact that security is a dance and everyone participates in the dance, whether you like it or not. And it's not the DJ that determines the dance. And it's not, you know, the venue owner. It's the people on the dance floor. We need everyone involved, because everyone plays a role. And if we can help people actually understand what's going on, I think that sometimes you get a security person and that person is like really smart in a certain way, but like maybe doesn't have super high emotional intelligence. And then even though it's so important to connect with and teach and listen to other people, sometimes security people don't have that skill set. And what happens is you simply don't get the result you want. But now we can engage with all sorts of different people, and we actually have to engage with everyone if this is going to work. And it starts with security and engineering teams, but it goes all throughout the business, because security happens as a result of business decisions. It's like, if you have data that needs to be protected, you could figure out how to protect it, but you could also make a business decision not to store that data in the first place, in which case the risk goes away in a completely different way. But that kind of a conversation requires a discussion between security leadership and business leadership. And do security folks have a seat at that table? Do business folks respect and listen to security folks, which happens usually as a result of security folks actually showing some curiosity and wanting to learn and having respect? It's a different way of looking at things. We need everyone if we're going to do this right. And I really want us to do this right. In the next 17 years, I want OWASP Top 10 to look different, because I want us to have figured this out, because we know how to figure it out. We just have to do it. And that's really, it's the hardest part. And we need to try something different that we haven't tried before, because everything we've been doing for the last 20 years hasn't worked.
You're still on point. You mentioned the like OWASP Top 10. Can you explain more about what the OWASP Top 10 is? What is pen testing? Yes. I know you work for a company that does pen testing as a service. I'd love to hear more.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for asking. OWASP Top 10 is a list of the most common web application security vulnerabilities. I do everything on the web, and I don't like that my applications are vulnerable. Applications are vulnerable, and they're all vulnerable in these like basic fundamental ways that industry experts understand. And that's called the OWASP Top 10. I happen to teach a course on LinkedIn Learning about the OWASP Top 10. I break it down in a way that is intended to be really accessible and just make sense so that people can understand the concepts. As far as pen testing goes, we have software, and software is vulnerable. and people are capable of breaking that software. And so you could have a person break into software who's a malicious actor. You could have people break into software who's like a good person. And if you are an organization who is responsible for the security of your software and applications, then it's a good idea to hire people to break your software before malicious people break your software. You want to hire experts who know how to hack so that they can find the problem so that you can fix them before they get exploited. That's what pen testing is. Pen testing as a service is all about getting people manual pen testing, because the most interesting and hardest to find software security issues cannot be found via scans or machines or AI or anything fancy. It actually just comes from really smart people finding this stuff. But historically, it hasn't been easy to get that done quickly. With pen testing as a service, it's like, you just buy it. It's cloud. I buy some pen testing as a service. If I need a pen test, I can get it going in 24 hours. And I can have a team of people who are experts pen testing my software right away. That's what modern software development needs. And we haven't been able to do that. In 2013, I worked for a company called Cigital. Cigital got acquired by Synopsys. I was performing BSIM assessments. These are basically software security assessments. And I found out that your typical enterprise organization was only pen testing a tenth of their application portfolio, which is terrifying to me. Now, today, that is 63%. 63 out of 100 applications are getting tested. We need to pen test all of our stuff, and we need to pen test it all of the time. And now we can with on-demand pen testing.
So on-demand pen testing is, you said, a team of manual pen testers that are coming to pen test your services when you need them. Do you think we are going towards, or do you think we'll ever get to a stage where our pen testing is more automated? Or whenever any developer pushes some code, we will have containers running with Metasploit and other pen testing tools that will automatically pen test the code that the developer has written?
We need both. We need both, because there are vulnerabilities that can be found by looking for patterns. There are vulnerabilities that can be found by analyzing data. And sometimes there are vulnerabilities that can't. Machines cannot find business logic flaws. They can't find race conditions. They can't find chained exploits. In order to find those types of vulnerabilities, those classes of vulnerabilities, which happen to be the most interesting and important ones, you actually need a person to do it. So there's a lot of what I'll call low-hanging fruit that a person could find, a machine could find, a machine could find, and a person could validate. Today, the problem with a lot of our scanning is that there's a really high noise to signal ratio. And that's different when you have people finding exploits. It's all signal.
So will it sometimes take longer for somebody to sift through all the positives and false positives of automatic pen testing than taking somebody to manually eyeball an application and pen test it?
Sometimes it will. It just depends on a lot of things. How long does it take you to run that scan in the first place? And then what is the manual effort required to go through the results? If you look at that and you compare that to getting one or two or three pen test experts attacking code to see what vulnerabilities exist, putting those into a platform, sharing those with engineering, collaboratively talking with engineering about what's happening and how to fix it. I think if our goal is to find and fix vulnerabilities, on-demand pen testing can actually be a really effective and fast way to go about it. That is not to say that regression testing is not super important. That is not to say that there are classes of vulnerabilities that can be found via scanning, and we should be using that to do that. We need to kind of be doing all the things all the time. But they're for different purposes. And there are some things that can be done with one that cannot be done with the other. So you kind of have to do both.
You kind of have to do everything in order to keep your stuff safe.
That's right. But if you have to choose, on-demand manual pen testing is not a bad way to go.
Right. Do you think that in the next 5-10 years, we're going to be coming, like, what more to that automatic pen testing, using, I don't know, machine learning algorithms to help identify false positives more accurately?
From my perspective, it's kind of like, what that's going to help the pen testers to do is it's going to help them draw a map so that they can figure out where to focus their time, so that the time of the manual pen test team can actually be optimized. That's what I think is going to be the best use of this, like, AI and ML. I don't see a place where we're getting to, like, automatic remediation. You know, I'm actually, you know, occasionally skeptical of any sort of, like, blocking, unless it's just at a network layer, which is something that, you know, we've spent decades solving that problem. We know how to do that. I don't think that AI or ML is going to solve everything for us. And one of the reasons is just because the way that AI and ML work is they work on data sets. And the data set of the past is never going to completely match the data set of the future. And so the predictions can never be exactly accurate. There's always going to need to be a person going in and saying, let me take a look at this. Let me consider the context that I know about that I wasn't able to upload. And let me evaluate this with some human creativity and innovation on top of what the machine tells me. And what the machine tells me can help me get started faster, can help me focus on the right area so that I'm making the best use of my time. That's how I see it developing.
Interesting. There's also another aspect that there's so many pathways that can be hacked into. I guess when you're looking at one application, it's hard for AI to, like, identify all of them and, like, understand all of them and all the separate use cases, because it's very, very wide instead of very narrow.
That's right. And then there's another part, which is that the sexy part is the finding the vulnerability, but the important part is the fixing the vulnerability. And so if you have a human finding it, that human can actually help the person that's fixing it. Machines and scanners don't help with the fixing part. And in fact, they kind of make the fixing part difficult sometimes. Where exactly does the fix occur? What exactly needs to be done? Who exactly owns it and needs to do it? Those are all things that a machine can't do. The machine can't speak to the engineering manager and say, hey, we found a problem. It is important. Let's talk about working together to get a fix on the next sprint. That conversation has to happen between people. A scanner is not going to have that conversation for you. And it is so important to fix the vulnerabilities. Finding is just the first step.
100%. How does your company empower the engineering teams to work together with the pen testers to actually remediate problems?
Yep. So we do not spit out a 50-page PDF and then hold a meeting to talk about it. We have a platform that integrates with Jira and Slack and that has an API. So when the pen testers find problems, they put it into the platform and then the customer can get it to the engineers in whatever way works for the engineers. If the engineer wants to hop on Slack with the pen tester and talk with them asynchronously about how to fix a problem, they can do that. If they want to receive it through a Jira push, if they have a custom internal pen test management dashboard that they've built internally, they can use the Cobalt API to pull out the findings data however they want. We have spent time thinking about how engineers like to receive information and how to make it easy for engineers to get their work done. So we're looking at what are the tracking systems that developers live in and work in, and how do we get the pen test data that they need to have into those systems? And then how do we connect them with the pen testers? We also do this thing at the end where your pen test is done, as the findings are found, they're getting pushed to you through the platform, but we will also come back when you've remediated those findings and we'll validate them. And we'll say, yeah, like, as an objective third party, we agree, like, you have actually fixed this. So we're really trying to move beyond just the finding to really support teams through actually remediating and validating that remediation is complete.
I love that. I really love that. Is there any single way or any advice on how to educate engineering teams and show them the context, give them context about how important a vulnerability is, why it takes more priority to remediate a vulnerability than build a new feature?
Engineers are super smart people and they can see for themselves if you show them. If you demonstrate to them how a vulnerability can be exploited, they're smart, they will get it. And I think that as security people, you know, we often have this idea that it's more important to fix the vulnerability than it is to build the new feature. That may or may not be true. Today, we happen to be speaking in February. And if someone finds a vulnerability, maybe it's the right thing for them to fix it in February, but maybe it's the right thing for them to fix it in March. Maybe it's the right thing for them to fix it in April or May or June. That's the conversation that needs to take place between people. Because if I find something in February and I get fixed and I get it fixed in June, that's a win as far as I'm concerned, depending on a lot of different things, right? How severe is it? How bad is it? But if I find something and I hound someone to get it fixed right away, and I annoy them and they don't want to talk to me and they don't read my emails and they won't take my meetings, June's going to come and go and the vulnerability is not going to get fixed.
Yeah, no, you're so right about that. I think we sometimes underestimate like the business decisions. Like, I think by not being able to communicate effectively and by security engineers just handing out 50 page reports of vulnerabilities, then it makes it look like the security engineers don't understand the business decisions, which is very true.
Yes.
In a lot of cases.
It's like when you have a big family meal and there's like the grown-up table and the kids table. And there's different discussion that happens at the grown-up table than at the kids table. And we as security professionals, we want to sit at the grown-ups table. Because we want to understand the business context. We want to understand that sometimes it's the right thing for the vulnerability to get fixed in 3 months, but I'm not going to let it go 18 months and have it not be fixed. But sometimes what happens is we're a little bit like too goody two shoes. We're a little bit like too 100% perfectionist. We're like, these security problems are important and we need them fixed now. And everyone looks at us and is like, well, clearly you don't get it. So we're just not going to listen to you. That does not help. We need a seat at the grown-up table.
Amen. I agree. Last question. My last question is, you deal with a lot with pen testing, and what vulnerabilities have you been seeing a lot recently?
Security misconfiguration is our number one top found vulnerability category for the past 4 years. And it's a lot because of this whole move to cloud, right? People aren't doing private data centers, on-premise infrastructure. It's all cloud and it's all configurations. And there are so many ways that you can use an insecure configuration. So I would say that if someone's interested in securing software, if someone's interested in learning about security vulnerabilities, we did 6,000 pen tests last year. And we found so much security misconfiguration. So if you're going to pick one to learn about, that's my top one, coming from real life data, recent real life data of thousands and thousands of pen tests that we conducted last year. And actually for the past 4 years, I mean, just thousands and thousands of pen tests, far and away, the most prevalent is security misconfiguration.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing with that. And thank you so much for coming on. This has been a fascinating conversation for me and super informative as well. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.